Ask the Podcast Coach for April 9th, 2016.
Let's get ready to podcast.
All right, it's time for Ask the Podcast Coach, your podcasting questions answered live. And we are minus one Dave Jackson this morning. He is out, not with us today. And Dave, we're thinking about you as you're out today. But I am Jim Collison, and usually Dave's co-host. I am not the podcast coach. I'm just the podcaster who comes on and helps out Dave, make sure we keep the chat room and everybody intact. Today with us, and of course, you've seen him before, and he hangs out with us whenever Dave is out, Mike Howard. Mike from JPEG Draw, how are you?
I'm great.
Good to have you on a Saturday morning. You're always, I ask you like Fridays at, I think it was maybe 10 o'clock last night.
Yes.
Hey, I had tried a few other folks, not to make you feel bad or anything, but I tried a few other folks because I tried to mix it up and I couldn't get anybody to come in on a Saturday morning. I have to quit asking my West Coast friends because it's like 7:30 on a Saturday.
So in other words, I was last choice.
Always. Yeah. I mean, if
that's
what you're
That's fine. I'm always here listening every Saturday morning as I work on my show. So, you know, I was going to be here anyway. It doesn't mean I fall further behind on my own show, or I'm going to be here longer Saturday day at my desk.
Well, I always appreciate you coming in. JPEG to Raw is a photography podcast. What's going on over there on your show?
What's that?
Besides controversy. The last time we talked to you here on Ask Podcast Coach, you'd had a... you'd had kind of a flame, you know, situation with your guest. And then there was one more, right? That got a little heated. One more guest.
The we don't intentionally have controversial guests. The one guest you're talking about where I was on here and talked about them, that was because of the guest actions, what they were doing online, saying some very controversial things, you know, against minorities, against, different groups, yeah, segments of the country. And that was made them very controversial. Last week or 2 weeks ago, no, it was last week, we had somebody on who ran Photo Stealers. It's basically a website that they get people coming to them saying, hey, this person is on their website, they have stolen photos. And it's not just you have a blog and you put up a few photos. This was where you are, you're a photography business yourself, and the images you're putting to the public and saying, these are our images that we take, are all stolen from other photographers. And it's easy for this person to go out and find, here's the original photo taken by the original photographer, and here's where you're doing it. And they're also doing things like, had a great photo shoot with Jim today, here's our photos, and they didn't do anything with Jim. So you wouldn't think that's too controversial, but the people who get called out are generally very combative at first, at least at first. They're very combative and claiming that it was their web designer, it was their intern, or whatever they want to say. So we had one of the people who got called out in our chat room, and there was a lot of bickering going back and forth in the chat room, at least. But if you watch the show, very little of that made it into the show. I did stop at one point because the person just kept going on and said, you know, this is my show. I'll ask the questions I want to ask, and I'm not going to ask those kind of questions. If you have a legitimate question for our guest, then let us know. But other than that, you didn't see any of that.
It's nice to be able to control it from that standpoint. Speaking of questions, if you have a question, this is a question and answer show. We'd like to have your questions. You can do that in one of two ways. There's an open seat right down below us here that you can jump in. We do one at a time. We ask you to just kind of jump in. If we are talking, just hang tight and we'll get to it. We do ask that you have a question. If you don't have a question, sometimes we get those blabbers who just jump in. And you can always tell because you bring them and they go, hey, what's up? Right. And then you're like, no, we're actually looking for questions. So if you're hanging out here and you want to join us, you got a question just like we have here, jumping in. Although that picture is not the best. I mean, if you've got whoever's trying to jump in with me right now, if you would put your question in the chat room real quick so I can kind of double check it. I'm a little crazy about that. If you do have a, if you do got a question, that you don't want to jump in, maybe you're still in your pajamas and that is okay. You can, just do /Q and it'll go into our question here. We've got a few of those queued up right here. Actually, so Broken Cameras, actually, he or she is the one that just jumped in. If you want to jump back in, that picture though, Mike, is a little disturbing. We see there in their profile the picture. Yeah. So I've been using Blab from the beginning on my iPhone. I recently tried on my Windows laptop, but keep getting redirected back to the sign in page every time I tried to sign in. What's the problem? So using Blab from the beginning on my phone, which is, I assume, on the iPhone, right? The app is on Android, right? For that on the iPhone, you have to use the web browser. For it on Windows, keep getting redirected back to the sign-in page on that. And a Broken Camera, is that on? And if you want to jump in, and we've got a few questions for you here, I'll let you here. Let's bring this person. I would say, because you never know if it's a guy or a gal. We'll hear in just a second.
Right.
Hey.
Good. You have a camera there? Can we see you?
It's broken.
Oh, well, there you go.
Broken camera.
That's right. There you go. So you're on Windows.
Yes. Every time I try to sign in, I sign in. And then it goes for a second. And then it says redirecting back to the sign-in page. I'm not sure if it has to do something with my security settings on the Windows or maybe the firewall or maybe the Norton virus. I don't know
what's your browser? What are you using for a browser?
Google
Chrome?
Yes.
Okay. And then what version of Windows are you on?
I'm still on 7.
Okay. And can you access, like Google Hangouts? Do you have any problem getting into a Hangout? Have you tried that?
I never tried any Google Hangouts, but I access Yahoo Messenger or
okay.
With
no problems there. Can you can you just watch a Blab or
I can't even get into it.
You're into it now though, right?
Because must be on his phone.
Yeah. I'm on my phone.
Gotcha. Okay.
But every time I try to sign in, it's like I click it and then it says it goes to another page for a second, and the page is saying it's like redirecting. So I didn't even get a chance to read the whole app, you know,
kind of the whole error message. I haven't heard of that, and I'm not sure what. Mike, any ideas?
The only thing I do when I come across a technical problem like that is start doing process elimination. So if Chrome isn't working, try IE. If you're thinking it may be your
lab, right? Blab has struggles on IE, so Firefox is the one to go.
Well, then try Firefox. If you think it may be your antivirus or your firewall, you know, disable them just for a minute to see how that works with that.
Shut off. Like if you're using Norton, shut that off. Make sure you've rebooted. Make sure you're on the most up-to-date version of Chrome. You know, those are the kind of things you have to roll through, but I have not heard of that problem.
You can try incognito of Chrome, too.
Incognito would be a good way to try. So does that help any?
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
All right. Hey, how can we help you fix your camera? Just kidding. Okay.
You get a new one, I guess. You got to get a new one.
Probably so. I didn't put two and two together, that broken camera and that he was going to be broken. So, Doug. Doug, if you want to jump in, you're welcome to. That might be easier to talk about that if you're here. And Mike Dell says there is there's an iOS app for Slack. Now it's not really a question; that's more of a statement. But it's
Tried going off from what we're going right there? Have you tried the new Facebook Live?
No, I have not.
So, Mike, in one of the podcast groups, Mike Russell did one. Have you seen that?
I saw him doing it. I did not see the. I did not see the contents of it. No. Yeah. So, Mike, it's really no different than Periscope, right? I mean, it's kind of one way. You can't do this, right? Like, you can't join two Facebook Live things together
I'm saying it's a 30-minute limit, which won't work for me. The other thing for me, the problem is going to be, you know, our show is, we use a video switcher, you know, vMix. We do a lot of stuff like that, which I couldn't do from the phone. So where I see some other people using it, you do it within your group or you do it as an event inside the event. And you're doing it as not the main podcast, but as a sideshow. So let's say Jared Pollan, the Fronos Photo guy, and I'm keeping this within my
realm of photography. He does it as a side thing, not their main podcast, but as something to keep connected with the community, where maybe he's doing an editing session or he's doing something like that, looking at a new camera he just got, or even a, you know, I know one of your friends, Dave McCabe, likes to do those unboxing things. I never understand people who like to watch unboxings, but whatever.
Tons of people do.
I know. There's a lot of people do. So, yeah. You know, you could do something like that. I don't know if it'd fit for us for the main podcast.
Yeah, it just seems to me that it's very periscope-ish in kind of its application. And for that, I want to go live right now and do 30 minutes of something. I think it's awesome. I just don't think it's a podcast.
And they release these things only for the phone. I don't know. Why don't they do some of this stuff on a desktop? Yeah. Anyway.
So Doug is out camping. He can't join us. He had a question for me earlier about Slack. And we had been, so if you're just calling, oh, you're not calling in anymore. If last week, I think it was last week, we talked a little bit about Slack groups, and he had asked a question, are there some tutorials or some things if you were going to get some people who have never used Slack before? And so I looked at it. Slack's actually got some good stuff internally, and it's actually, once you're in Slack, it's really, really easy to use. Most people should pick up on that pretty quickly. One of the weird things about Slack, if you're going to create a Slack group, you first have to create the group. So you create, let's just say we'd say askthepodcastcoach.slack.com. You would create that, and then you invite people to that. And as you invite people to that via email, they'll have to create a login for it as well. And so there's a little bit of a dual, you know, you've got to have the group and a login to the group set with by email address. So, Doug, I would not hesitate to send people just to Slack to give them get a try. And once you're in it and you're using it, there's nothing better than just using it to get people working with it. Like, don't have super high expectations in the very beginning. Just jump in, use it. It's pretty easy if you're going to go that route. So give that a try. Always let, you know, YouTube be your friend. And let, you know, there's videos out there, but I just don't think you really need them. It's pretty easy. Hey, so Mark Moriarty is in the chat room. Mark, I interviewed Mark, on Thursday on Home Gadget Geeks. I actually hijacked my own podcast. I'm going to put the link to it. I don't normally do this. You guys know I don't pimp the average guy stuff, but too much here. But because it pertains so much to podcasting, and we spent an hour, a little bit over an hour, talking about Mark's new platform called Awesound. Mark, if you want to jump in, if you're in a spot, you want to jump in for a few minutes, we won't take the, we'll just say hi and catch up with you a little bit. We cover in the podcast, we cover an hour and some change on Awesound, and it's, Mark's trying to join marketing and ads to podcasters. And he kind of says in there that he's trying to make it easy. We'll bring Mark in and say hi to him. He was gracious enough to stay up till 2 a.m. For me on Thursday nights, because we do our show live Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central. And so he was.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm really well.
Good.
It's a much more civil time to be speaking this time. There's actual sun in the sky.
It is kind of nice, isn't it? Hey, so did you get a good, did we do okay on Thursday with the podcast? Was that?
I didn't listen through the full 90 minutes. I listened to about 30 minutes before lunch there. I really like it. Yeah, sounds great.
Good. We covered a lot of that. One of the things that I wanted to cover here with you is, we think, because everybody's interested in the ad part of it, right? That's kind of the key stuff.
Kind of the core of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and since it's a year of players too, I told you I would embed the player on my site. And so I did. I grabbed your embed code. It's sitting out there. So the player, the very first player are you. And so I actually have three players on the
site. It felt quite meta. I clicked play on the player.
Yeah,
a podcast reviewing Awesound, and there it was. So nice demo.
It just played. But I also dropped the link to, so folks at the below the player, if folks want to go out to it and view it on Awesound, they could do it there. Awesome. Because it's interesting. You've got the player down below. You've got all this on the shares. You know, you've got clamor and you've got ability to speed it up and slow it down and all those things, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, speed me up
in the player. When we think about, let's do a quick 3 minute, your best elevator pitch. When we think about Awesound and this piece about advertising, because this is the hardest thing for podcasters, how are you guys doing it different than anybody else?
Sure. So basically there's two options for you if you want to use our tool for advertising. One option is if you want to sell the ads yourself. And the second option is if you want us to sell ads for you. And of course, you can combine. So if you want to sell the ads yourself, you can just use AllSound so that different listeners hear different versions of your podcast. Example, you know, you get a sponsor who has a deal for a product only available in the States, and then you can set it so listeners in America will hear this version, and then you might get a second sponsor for all the international listens. Or you might have one version for people that you know are return listeners and subscribers that has an ad for something. And then for people who haven't listened to your show before, instead of blaring an ad at them, you might have a call to action that says, you know, please subscribe on iTunes. No matter how you found this show, maybe you just stumbled across it on Twitter, but use that time so you're advertising a different action than a product. And then the second way you can use us is to say more like the YouTube model, where you upload and you just take monetize. So you say, you know, I put my heart and soul into the content. I'd love the audience to grow. I'd love to make money from it. I don't really feel like spending half a day per week taking screenshots of stats and emailing the same sponsors that everyone else is emailing. So you can try us out. We'll run a pilot. We'll stick in a couple of ads in your show. You can veto anyone that you don't like, because obviously, you know, fit with your audience is very important. And the way we work is we see who's actually downloading your show, and then we sell appropriate ads against that. So the same sort of targeting that you can do yourself, we automate the whole process. Yeah. And then there's no commitment. So you can kind of see how much you're earning and whether or not it's worth your time, or maybe use it as a stepping stone until you build up a bigger audience and go on to sell your own ads. Or if you're happy with it, then stick around.
Yeah. And when I went out, I've loaded, you know, you can either load your podcast individually, create a playlist, which is an RSS feed. You could give that RSS feed out to mm-hmm. iTunes if you want to push. One of the things, Mark, I think I'm going to try is I'm going to create a separate RSS feed into my audience. I'm going to say, if we're trying this, if you want to support the podcast from an ad standpoint, because we've always been ad free on our podcast.
Yeah. Fair play.
If you want to support the podcast, you can use this link, put in your podcast player, put this link in, and you'll get ads from me that you guys will insert. And so that's kind of how I'm going to try it.
That's going to be a really interesting test.
Yeah.
That is.
I don't think, you know, it's interesting. You say that, and a lot of listeners in the chat room would say, yeah, I'll do it. And then they actually never do it.
No. Yeah. We'll see.
So what kind of revenue should the podcaster expect from that?
So it does depend on your audience. And we're so early stages that as time goes on, it tends to increase as well. So right now what we're saying to people is you've kind of two options. One is jump in, no commitment, see if it's worth your time. And then if there's any reason why you have like a particular, maybe you have option A is go sell this ad and I could get something. And then option B is AllSound. We could offer a minimum guarantee. So say the first 4 weeks, we'll do one pre-roll. We guarantee you $12 CPM, which is less than you could get if you went out there. But it's a minimum floor so that, you know, you won't get like nothing. And then hopefully it's a much bigger, and the bigger it is for you, the more like you are to stay, the more we make money. So our commission is percentage based rather than being absolute. So we want to go and find what's valuable to us is if you have a very valuable audience, if you have people who we can see are, for example, you know, interested in tech and rich, and we find sponsors that we can sell against those, then our 20% turns into something very meaningful for us. So yeah. It's 20% for us, 80% for the podcaster.
And you're incented because you're making 20%. So
that's it.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. All right. Dave Jackson would kill me if I didn't ask you these two questions. And I didn't ask them to you on the interview. So it'll be good that we get them here. Perfect. So when I upload my file to you, do you mm-hmm. change it in any way? Are you re-encoding it? Are you changing the file name? Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yes. So what we want to be able to deliver to the final listener is one MP3 file. So if you upload a version without any audio ad, we can stitch one on either at the start or the end, depending on the point that we've agreed. So the final downloaded versions will be a lot of variations of what you've uploaded. So your ID3 tags are preserved, your title is preserved, your description is constant for all listeners, all the keywords and all that remains the same. But the media file itself is re-encoded at our end.
Does that change the quality of it? Are you down?
No, it's literally just stitching what you had. And then if you imagine just stapling on a bit extra. Yeah.
Okay. So stitch your ad stitched to it. And I assume there's some kind of leveling so that the, because podcasters get super mad when volume is super high and super low, that kind of thing.
Correct. Yeah, we have leveling and also mini crossfade so that there's not an abrupt like click click.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then once you are my RSS feed and for whatever reason I want to leave, is there a 301 redirect option for me so I can
from us and away?
Yes, if I need to do that for whatever reason.
So if you're logged in and you go to osan.com/download all, I think is the link. In fact, you don't even have to remember it. There's a drop down in your personal thing if you want to go away. Because you might want to go away even temporarily. Try us, try something else. I really believe that you should be able to, like you are doing now, go to 6 or 7 at a time and try them all. Similarly, you might want to like sell your audiobook, but we are never going to ask you to be exclusive with us. So if you want to go away, firstly, you can download all your media and your description in like a zip file. Secondly, all your images and so on. And then in terms of redirecting the feed, first one we'll do, before we do 301, we'll maybe for 2 or so weeks have the iTunes new feed URL tag in the feed, because some podcasters catch that, they look for that tag. And then when you're sure you want to go, 301, which is permanent, which means bye-bye world. Nice knowing you. So
it was nice having
you. We prioritized this how to easily leave before we had how to quickly upload. And so the process to leave was built before the process to even publish was there. I just knew, you know, from talking to tens and tens of podcasters, that is so important. You've got to be fluid and not be shackling down, especially if for a company like us, which is young and small, and there's not that track record where you can say that, well, I know they've been in business like some companies, you know, 10 or 15 years. Therefore, you can assume they'll be in business another 10 or 15. A lot of initial users were nervous on that point exactly. And they said, cool. But it's kind of like if you were putting your money in a bank, you'd want to know that it's a trustworthy bank, you know, and that they're not going to seize your money. I feel the same way with audio. It sounds melodramatic to non-podcasters. But if you're a podcaster, you get that analogy perfectly. It's like, this is my work and this is how I hope to make money. So I don't want there to be any doubt about owning it or taking it back or switching it or duplicating it. So there is a link in the dropdown there for that.
Good. And the other thing Dave always likes to make sure this isn't a completely free service from that standpoint. I mean, you guys have a revenue model and you are charging. We actually like it when companies charge because we know that they're going to stay around for a while.
Sure.
You have a couple of plans. We talked about those in depth on the interview that I did. And so, again, I'll drop that link here in the chat room. And Dave will include it in the show notes. About an hour and 20 minutes with you. We spent a ton of time. So,
sorry I hijacked your
show. Oh, no, it was awesome.
Entirely.
It was. I did tell Mike Howard here, Mike, with me that I did get my first note back from somebody. They said, where's the gadgets? So it's a good
gadgets for podcasters.
When you hijack your own podcast to do something that you really love, and I mixed my two worlds. You know, typically we talk about gadgets on Thursday night, but it was really interesting. I wanted to talk about some of this podcast stuff with you. I was particularly intrigued with this when we think about what you're doing with mid-roll or pre-roll or post-roll, right? How those things. You mentioned something, you said it just a second ago, but I want to dig in a little bit more, where it doesn't just, the role idea doesn't just have to be advertisements, and they can be things that are specific to how often the listener has come back and listened to this podcast. And my idea was, hey, look, for my listeners who come all the time, they don't need to hear me say, this is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, right?
Sure,
because they know that. And this what this concept you're coming up with allows me to assign that intro as a role, right?
Yeah,
and exactly. I can put that in and then decide who to play it for and how often they've been listening to it, right? Am I getting that right?
Perfectly. I mean, the whole general concept is that if you're publishing tech and people are listening on a digital device, you can give a slightly different experience to different listeners. And so one very commercial, attractive application of that is, oh, let's personalize the advertising. And then you can sell ads at a higher price and everybody makes more money. But then there's a whole load of other fringe ones, like saying that those who you recognize as someone who's listened, as you say, to the last 100 episodes, an ad is just one version of a message. It's a message that somebody's paying to put out there. But you could put out your own message in lieu of that or as well as that. Or like you mentioned in the podcast, the idea of cross promo. So you say, for those who have listened to my show a bunch, but maybe haven't listened to Mike's show, I'm going to use that moment to cross promote his show. And then similarly, look out for Mike's listeners who say aren't on my show. It's particularly good if you have like a podcast network and you've multiple shows on AllSound, then you yourself can set up, you know, rules about audience between the shows.
I expect you to do that soon.
Yeah, so I have to record a JPEG to RAW roll to run on my own podcast. But it's interesting, Mark, because this gets us beyond this idea of just dumping ads into our podcast, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, when I do an Audible ad in the middle of my podcast, right, they get one choice. They're going to have to listen to the Audible ad. Where what I hear you saying is you guys are kind of thinking about, let's take the responsibility of the ad itself and let's put a little analytics behind it. So we're serving the right ad to the right person and that That's we're it. Doing it at the right time. Because again, if this listener has already heard my Audible ad 50 times, do I really want them to hear it again? Or could I serve them something new that might be more beneficial?
Because you feel conflicted if you know that some listeners, you know, people are discovering your show all the time and you do want to make money and maybe Audible is offering you this deal, but then you're not serving your whole base with the one message. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I noticed. I'm looking at your site now. You have a bunch of different plans there, four or five different plans. One of them being the one where you can earn 80% commission. And you mentioned before where you can veto or whatever term you used. I don't want this ad. I don't want that ad.
Yeah.
So, you know, what if I'm very selective and I'm only going to let a few ads through, but I'm on that partner plan or profit plan, I think it's called. I'm still getting unlimited storage and that kind of stuff for my audio podcast.
Yeah. So it's a human business once you're in that category. So if you've in theory vetoed every single one, we might have to Skype and talk about it. But first and foremost, you absolutely need to feel like you're fully in control, not just of your content, but of the whole messaging and the whole brand. So I don't want to create a world where I don't want it to be fully like YouTube where you tick a box and then kind of don't really know what people are going to see. Maybe in 5 years that would be acceptable because people will be used to the idea of ads being separate to content. And I certainly don't blame a YouTube publisher for the ads. Whereas today people expect that a podcaster has at least involved and, you know, okayed and given permission for whatever ads wind up in there. So
could I ever do the reverse of that where you have a list of all the advertisers you have going and I can say, I want this one, this one, this one?
Probably in that it's kind of two ways to get to the same point in that if we have an option and you're given blacklist that by process of elimination is kind of whitelisting the rest, you could say, let's start by doing the opposite. Show me the shortlist and we'll whitelist a few. I mean, in both of our interests, what we want to do is maximize the choice so that if there are valuable ads, we get to run them because you make more. Right. We only get a commission of what you make. But yeah, if you wanted to like start with a pilot and say, I only want to see that one advertiser for the next 3 weeks or those two advertisers, especially if you're testing it for the first time with your audience, you're not sure it's a good idea at all. That's probably the smartest way to do it. In fact, Jim, that's probably what we should do if you want to try one or two of your shows so you know what to look out for.
I kind of have a good feel for my audience. And like I said, many of them in the live show when we pitched that said, if you gave me a link for a supported sponsored podcast, I'd listen to it. Those are by far the minority of my listeners. Sure. I'll wait this week. It takes maybe 2 weeks. I'm out there. I'm signed up. We're going to get some things set up. I do like this idea of just a sponsored feed for those people who will take it. Because they're all the time, podcasters or listeners say to me, how can I support you? Right. And that donation thing never really worked for me. We have a tech scholarship fund through Amazon that's what we call it through the Amazon affiliate link. But I do get that from time to time. Like, how do I support you? And it would be nice to have this option that says, you know what? We have a feed. You're going to get two ads in it.
If
you sign up for it, you're agreeing to listen to these ads. And I think the folks on my, at least live on Thursday night, kind of said, yes, Mark, an interesting dichotomy we just, I think, talked about when we think about advertising expectations of the listener or the viewer in between YouTube and our RSS feed, right? That RSS feed is so much more intimate than the YouTube thing is. We can just spray people on YouTube and for the most part, you just shotgun them and blast it out. You really don't care. But that RSS feed is fairly intimate, right? I mean, it's one of those.
It is.
Like, don't.
It's also, there's a few reasons I think it's different. One is just because we've been this way for a while. Another reason is that on YouTube, you accept that people can look way off the board and YouTube are so aware of that that's why there's a skip ad button that a lot of people hit. And then they'll bill the advertiser if the ad is watched and not if it's not. And then also YouTube, it's kind of a free for all, you know, the suggested videos popping up around and you're lucky that I'm watching a video at all sort of thing. Whereas with a podcast, you know, I subscribe to your feed and I put in my earphones and I put the phone back in my pocket and I started the car engine or whatever. And there's a, like a trust that I don't want you to screw up on my gym. You know, like if you haven't had ads in before and you're putting ads in, I'm depending on you to not abuse the fact that you've got my earphones, you know? So I think that's why it's way more intimate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's trust. Right. And I think this is why I'm being careful. It's like, I don't want to just switch feeds and all of a sudden these ads surprise start popping. Yeah. And I've podcasted for 5 years on a commercial free platform for the most part. Although that's not necessarily true. We talk about, I have a sponsored app from LastPass. I've had talk.to sponsor, some of the things that I've done in the past. And so we stitch them in so they don't feel like it's a commercial, but they absolutely are. This would be more, right? This is more ad insert, right? So I'm talking and then it's going to stop and then there's going to be an ad that plays and then it's going to start the audio again, right?
It's entirely up to you whether you want to kind of incorporate it. You could say, and now we're going to pause for an ad or we'll be back after these. Or you could just ignore it and just let it.
One of my listeners said on the live, I could always just 30 seconds, right? There's nothing stops from clicking the button if they don't want to hear it.
That's one of the beautiful things that, if you notice that people are skipping certain ads or certain messages and you can detect that and you can detect it with the web player, right? Because we've got the 30-second button there. And if we put in an ad and a hell of a lot of people hit the 30-second button, we can learn from that. I think that's useful to you as a podcaster to say, oh, I was putting out the Audible thing and turns out people hate it. Then I tried promoting Mike's thing and nobody skipped it. So instead of treating skips as bad news, to treat it as data and over the course of months, get better and better at understanding which listeners like hearing which and what people are resistant to and very tolerant of. And that's like from our point of view is how we think we can make things more relevant. And from a podcast point of view, hopefully how you can also get the pulse from your listeners.
Yeah.
I might do the same thing you're talking about, Jamis.
Yeah.
Set up a second feed.
No risk. Yeah. No risk there, Mark. I think you'd appreciate some of those statistics and figuring out what's working. You're in the early.
It's early and it's human. So to work with people that are very hands-on and open to trying stuff is ideal for me.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, we give you 4 weeks to hit this number.
I'll remind people if you're interested in this, Awesound, AWESOUND.com. Mark's very accessible. I sent him an email last night and you got right back to me through it. So you're the one answering the emails, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, most of them, at least for the partnership ones. Yeah.
Well, that's the great thing about a small business. Yeah. And we interviewed you, and I'll say if you go to theaverageguy.tv/HGG, that's for Home Gadget Geeks, but HGG255. That's an easy, that's a way of getting there very, very simply. Dave, I'll put it in the show notes as well as it'll be available out there. Mark, you and I spend an hour. It's well over an hour.
Yeah, I feel like I've hijacked two of your gigs now.
No, you're good. You're good. Mark, I want to say thanks. This is very interesting. It's more than just ads, right? I think this is, as we dug in on Thursday and talked about it, one of the things I discovered is this idea is more than just ads. And ads are there. And I think a lot of podcasters struggle with it when we think about monetization. Yeah. But you're trying to approach it in a way, I think that's fairly unique.
I'm approaching it from a very statistical and data point of view. What is the data we have on who's listening right now? What are they skipping? When are they downloading and not listening? If they're on the web, which bits are they listening? I'm excited if you leave the web players up for a few weeks and then 2 or 3 weeks, we'll take a look.
I'm just going to leave it in. It's embedded on the site. So if you go out to theaverageguy.tv/HGG255, the player is the very first player. It's the teal colored player that is there. That's what comes at the end. And then right below it is a link to the web page where you can go. And that the player that you have on the web page has the ability to speed up and I don't think slow down, but speed it up. Why would you ever slow down? I'm not sure
if you were learning English or transcribing.
Oh, that's right. No, you're right.
Or writing a quote. There's exceptions.
That's stooge.
But no, if it's us talking, you won't be slowing it down.
Yeah. So you can speed it up. And then you've got integrations to Clamor and embed codes are out there and all those. all those pieces, your Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff.
I mean, someone else, if they really liked your track, could just as easily hit share, embed, and put it on their site.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good looking player. If I wanted to change the color of it, say teal actually matches my site. But if it didn't,
that's a coincidence.
Now
you've to message back and forth. We've customized players for a few people. Okay. If you go to bbrshow.com, bbrshow.com, you'll see a nice kind of purple and black one there. We've customized a few. It should be a self widget that you'll see in like a week. Just cool. A minor little.
Cool. Feature. Well, we'll dig in a little bit. It's something, you know, I knew, and I found out about you from one of my listeners like 3 or 4
weeks
ago. Yeah, one of my Australian listeners said, "Hey, have you guys seen Awesound?" And so we started checking it out, and then I pinged you, and you came on the show. So, Mark, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for letting me dial in.
You bet. Let you drop out. Thanks for meeting you, Mark. Seeing how this thing works.
Cheers. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Cheers. Take care.
Contact details there. See you later, guys.
Take care.
We got some questions out there, Jim.
Yeah. Let's dig into them.
Let's do Alex.
Okay. Hey, guys, I have a question about your podcast workflow after you've recorded a show or interview. Any suggestions on flow to get a final product, edit to MP3, add intros and outros, then upload to whatever podcast service? Mike, you want to talk a little bit about how you do that?
Yeah, and mine includes in the video portion of it, but I won't add that much to the video portion. So I record over via Skype, and you can see my recorder right back there. Plus, I record using VMix for the video, and it records audio. And I put the guest on the left channel, right channel, and me on the left channel. That way, I can edit their audio separately. You know, sometimes they're not as clean. My guests are not very technical savvy sometimes, so I can't do a recording over there. But I bring it into Audacity. Audition. I'm sorry. I bring it into Audition and then edit both sides and then mix that down to one mono mix, bring that into my video producer editing software, which is Premiere Pro, and then edit that in with the sync that up with the video, add an intro and an exit, which I already have recorded. It's just a video, audio sound on the beginning and the end. Put that in there in the beginning and the end, and then I use Premiere Pro to put out the three video feeds, one for YouTube, one video large, one video small, and then audio, and then upload those to YouTube and Vimeo and my website, which is where I host my all my feeds, my website. And then I have a few other places. I have a Google Docs spreadsheet that lists out the big steps, not every little minor step, but lists out all the bigger steps where I have to. Some sites like, which site is it? Spreaker. I upload that audio separately rather than, I think you can do an RSS feed or something like that. So I have a few places where I have to do that, where I have to upload the audio individually rather than just have it read the RSS feed. I then do a blog post and my website and use PowerPress, and that produces the RSS feed.
What do you think, Mike? What's your total time from beginning to end once you start editing to the time you're done posting it?
I don't go through and edit out every little and all that kind of stuff. If I notice some sound problems, you kind of know that while you're doing the show where the guest has something weird going on. Like I mentioned earlier about the guest who had some feedback, those I'll go through, but I can edit the audio, and we do an hour show. I can edit the audio pretty fast, in the half hour, something like that. And then the video actually is even shorter. I can edit the video. The big part of the video is let the computer process that. That'll take hours. But that's all just computer time. I can walk away after that. So I'd say my total time from beginning to end is less than 2 hours.
Mm. Yeah.
See, of my time.
Of your time. Yeah, yeah. And I think I'm more in the
4 or 5 hours.
Well, yeah, because you let some things run. I was going to say, I think I'm more in the 3 to 4 hour for a 1 hour show. Very similar, except I let the services, so if I'm on Blab or if I'm Hangouts, let them do the recording and I pull those down, create the video. And I'm an average guy, so I just use Windows Movie Maker that's good enough for what I'm doing to make my videos. Strip that, drop that in Audacity and strip off the audio from there. Do a little bit of processing on it, not much. I'm much faster editing in Audition than I am, in Audacity than I'm in Audition. Why did they have to use A's for both those?
So close. But I've come to realize Audition, Adobe Audition, better than Audacity. And since I have the full Creative Cloud thing, it's there. I do like the, you know, I record, like I said, through vMix. It records the audio and the video. But I like the audio that comes off right off the mixer into that digital recorder. I like that audio is generally cleaner for me. And I like the left and right channel thing.
Yeah.
And I know you're anti-mix minus, but it's so easy.
I know. I just don't think it's necessary in most cases. Let me just say this. I think for the average podcaster, they don't need to mess with it. It's more complex than they need. But that being said, you know, for me, most of the time, the audio I'm getting, because I'm pulling the live video and the live audio from it, is exactly what we went through. And a lot of these services, like Hangouts, work really hard to keep everybody's audio the same volume and some of those kinds of things. So then drop that. Go ahead.
Well, at the beginning of a show, right? You know, I have the guests come in 15, 20 minutes before the show starts. We do a little bit of audio sound check, and I try and get it close, you know, with the mixer, try and get us both close to that. It's not going to be perfect. And I would tell you that most of the time, that left-right channel thing doesn't really come that much into play because most of the guests have, you know, decent audio. But, you know, I might have somebody who's got the mic right here and keeps rubbing on their shirt, and we try and tell them during the show, you know, hey, put your hair back, whatever else, something like that. So you try and get it as clean as you can at the beginning, but you know, most of these guests just don't have the setup. Most of my guests don't have the setup, and their audio is not going to be there. So it gives me the option to, if I need to do more editing to their side of it.
Yeah, I do find, you know, oftentimes we'll get, and this is particularly with the ladies when they'll wear a necklace of some kind, and then that microphone will rub up against that necklace or whatever. You know, most of the guys, although I had this week, I had a guy with it kept hitting right on his collar. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, could we pin that over or, you know, so it's sitting like this, or because those microphones aren't bad to do. And you don't want them holding it. You know, I've had other guys hold them like this. Yeah. You know, like, no. Don't, especially when you're recording the video. If it's audio only, man, there's a ton of hoops you can do. Then at that point to get the very best sound. But everything I do is audio and video, so I don't get that luxury. I kind of have to take it. And then my advantage is in most cases, 90% of the time, maybe 95%, I'm interviewing podcasters or people who have done podcasts before. Mark, we had Mark on Thursday. That was the setup he podcasted with, and he has an ATR 2100 that he was running through, and it was just fine, right? It's an advantage to the gadget show that I do. It's an advantage to having very tech savvy for the most part. We have a listener coming in, longtime listener coming in this next Thursday. And when I was talking to him, he's like, oh, yeah, no, I bought all the equipment, and you know, because I wanted to have him on the show to talk about some of the things that he usually puts in the chat. And he's like, oh, no, I bought all the equipment. So I'm fortunate that a lot of my guests already have the gear.
You know, we occasionally do pre-shows to help guests out with their video and audio. And, you know, it's supposed to be, let's have a pre-show to help you with your audio and video in the situation that you're going to be doing it on show night. You know, it doesn't help me if you're doing it from Starbucks and during the show, you're going to be doing it at home because that's totally different audio video. But right. I've had people show up for pre-shows from a horse barn. Like, how is this going to help us for show? Are you going to be doing the show night from the barn with the horses? You know, what's happening there? Right. So it doesn't always work out. I'll tell you my whole workflow I just mentioned, the thing I hate the most, and actually is what I need to do today to get the show out. But the thing that I dread the most is doing the actual blog post, the show notes, and going through and setting all that up. If you want to talk, I can generally edit the audio, edit the video fairly quickly. The thing that's going to take me the longest is getting those show notes together. My co-host does show notes during the show. We have an outline of the questions basically, and he does show notes during the show. And I do have to do a little bit of editing to that, but then just getting everything set up. And I try and have a template for most of that. So actually once I get in it and start doing it, it's not that bad. It's just for whatever reason, I dread actually doing it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't cover this morning, but when we interviewed Mark from AwSound on Thursday, we spent some time. They do automatic transcriptions. There's a cost associated with it. So you want to review that on the pricing sheet, but you can just click transcribe and they've got a service that will go out and attempt to do a transcription. And it's like any other transcriptions, I'd say 75 to 85% accurate. But it also, Mike, comes with a, when it's transcribing, it also comes with a little play button for each one of the paragraphs that attempts to kind of group them together. And the more people that use it, the better it will get. It's kind of a self-learning system. And you click play and it will follow along with you if it, the audio and the video for the, you know, for the person listening, they can get both audio and video and watch it as it goes along, which is pretty cool. So again, we didn't talk about that this morning, but when you talked about show notes, if I needed to go and find a spot, I mean, how often have you tried to find that spot in your podcast where you're like, I know I said something and you got to listen to it, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, because it's transcribed and searchable, you can just search through the transcription to see if you can find it quickly, then push the play button. And then if you want, you could clamor right from there, which is kind of cool. So it's interesting. That was an interesting twist on the show notes concept. Also, it's a, you know, we're always as podcasters clamoring about trying to get our, you know, how do we get our content searchable SEO? And you're not going to sit there and do your own transcriptions, and paying for it on Fiverr isn't always the best option to get it done either. This is automatic that they're doing right there. So
I wonder how good the transcriptions are, because YouTube's are not that good.
Well, I would say it's good or as good as YouTube, which is still lacking. Although Mark said in the interview, it's a learning system. So the more we use it, the more it learns, the better it gets. So I think we're still in the early days of that, but yeah. We read some of it in the interview. I went back and pulled some transcriptions and reread some of it. It's pretty funny
it's so wrong.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, I didn't get that part right.
I do keep a notepad. If something comes up and I remember during the show that I want to, hey, I need to go back, I will generally write like a timestamp down during the show so I can go back and listen to that at that point.
It's a good way to do it. But if you want to do it automatically, it's worth that. I think that's the future, by the way, of podcasting, is that we drop these things and they get transcribed behind the scenes and then they're crawled from a search engine standpoint. Jason Bates asks, have you heard anything on the release for the Google Play? No, nobody has.
I hit refresh every week or so to see if anything's happening.
Nobody knows. It's Google is just taking their time. They'll do it when they feel like it. So it's not happening. And then Rhonda asks, what's the name of that service? Awesound is what we've been talking about. AWESOUND. Awesound.com if you want to check it out. We did an interview with them last week. theaverageguy.tv/HGG255 would be the hour and 20 minute interview where we went into the platform pretty deep. And trust me, I took a beating, or I'm going to take a beating from my listeners. It's a gadget show and I went all podcast on them. But I kind of did it for this audience, Mike, which is maybe a bad thing to do. But I had Mark. It was in the right slot. I don't necessarily wanted to take over Dave's show to do it, but it's an hour and 20 worth out there.
Yeah, you know, somebody mentioned, I was talking about hating to do show notes, but somebody mentioned advanced content templates for WordPress. I got the page put up. I'll look at that later on. I have kind of a template that I like, so there's no getting around having to do the show notes. Mine aren't in depth to begin with. So
you got to spend some time. I mean, even if they're transcribing it for you, transcriptions are not show notes. So you got to spend some time doing the work.
One thing, you know, we both use Chatwing, Jim.
Yeah.
And, you know, it allows you to download the Chatwing chat and all that kind of stuff. So like last week where we had a good chat, some of it was combative. A little
questionable.
I gave the guest a PDF of that, and I'm working on how I can embed that chat into the post. But the download they give you is doesn't lead well for putting into a blog post. You know, PDF that doesn't do you make me good. And then the CVS that they give you, the CVS file that they give you, just doesn't. Post, you know, you can't copy and paste it very well into the post.
Yeah.
So I haven't figured out an easy way to do that.
But there's no cheats. You got to, I think with show notes, if you're going to do them and do them well, I think you're going to have to spend a little bit of time kind of creating them. I think the best advice I've heard from a lot of podcasters is do the show notes in advance. Like get them put mostly together before you record your show. One, they will be a good guide for you as you're going along. And then two, it's like one of those things, you just don't have the motivation to do good show notes after the show. It's kind of like one of those things you're like, nah, I don't. But if you do it before, your motivations are in the right place because you're excited about the guest and, you know, this thing is coming up. And so if you can be building those show notes slowly through the course of the week, and then you've got most of them done. I've got some guests who do a great job of building their own show notes for me. So by the time we share a Google Doc, by the time I'm done with the show, I just copy and paste those out, put them right in the show notes. Sure. Let me pin this. It says, Jim, are you running, you're running the ATR and your audio through a Mackie USB mixer, right? That's correct. I've gone back and forth and doing the show on Blab. I'm just worried on the control or lack thereof I'll have with the mix. Well, yeah, I in my case, and Mike, I think you're in a similar boat. We run our equipment through mixers to go USB into the PCs that then go into Blab. I like having that control. I could just go straight USB if I wanted to.
I'm not going USB. I think I have the same mixer as you, the Mackie Pro FX8. And I XLR from the mic to the mixer. Right. And then I've got that little Behringer, whatever it is. I can't look at the name of it, but it's from the mixer. I use the output from the mixer to that Behringer, then from the Behringer. Well, actually the Behringer is USB to the computer. So from that standpoint, but I'm not going USB from the mixer to the computer. So actually the USB on the mixer, I'm not using at all. U-Control. Yep. She mentioned
the U-Control. And I could, if I wanted to, I could come right off my mixer and go into a recording device, whatever that might be, a portable recording device if I wanted to. I just choose not to in a lot of cases. For me, it's another button to forget to push. And, you know, I'm fine with the audio that comes off of, you know, this off of Blab or off of Hangouts. So I choose not to. Are you using a voice recorder or using a recorder separately, Mike?
So we do stream to YouTube Live. I can do Hangout or I can do Skype. Where I get the video doesn't really matter because of the way we do it. But I stream to YouTube Live. So that's my backup I record video locally, but I have the video on YouTube Live also. As far as the audio goes, I do record it on the computer using vMix, which also does the audio of the video, but then I also record it there on that little, Roland, digital recorder right off the mixer.
Yeah.
That's actually the audio I like the best.
Which one?
The one coming off right off the mixer into that Roland. Yeah. I like that audio the best.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do it. The trick is do it the way you're most comfortable, right? From that standpoint and however you're doing it. And so the Making Dad Show had said in there in the chat room, you know, audio and video from Blab. Yeah, in Blab's case, they give you a separate audio and video feed. You get an email, I don't know, 20 minutes after the show, and it says, hey, what I do for this program is I'll get the email, I'll download it, I'll put it in a MediaFire Dropbox type thing for Dave, and he just pulls it down, edits it in, put the music in. Although I did music, didn't I, in the beginning? So he'll put the music in and then we're done. And so it's a pretty good way of capturing that audio and video and getting it done. And like I said, I think it's good enough for me. So I don't worry about it too much.
We all have our different things. You know, for me, I like Blab from this standpoint, but we stream a lot of times with the guests. We show their photos and we may want to look at the photos. So those photos, you know, doing that way doesn't fit here with Blab very well. And not all our guests have Twitter accounts either. So are our listeners.
Jason asked the question, are audio enhancers worth the cost? And, you know, I think the easy answer is if it's terrible audio, there's not really much you can do to fix it in most cases. Garbage in, garbage out. And so all the audio enhancers in the world are not going to fix bad audio. You're just going to have to deal with it in a lot of cases. If it's really good audio and you've got some things you want to work with that you're comfortable with as far as setting levels or changing things, yeah, I think they can be. You know, we think about Alphonic or some of those types of things. They can be. Test it and see. This is my philosophy. Let your ears be the judge, whether it sounds better or not. There's a lot of gurus out there, a lot of sound gurus out there that will tell you, no, it's got to be in the sound format sample rate. Okay, that's great. If you want to go that route, great, do it. If you want to get that into it. Most of us don't have time to figure all that out or know it. Let your ears be the judge. If you listen to it and you like the sound of it and you're comfortable listening to it, let it go. But if you start listening to it and you're getting uncomfortable with your own audio, you have a problem. Chances are your listeners are also going to be very uncomfortable with your audio. So let your ears be the judge. Mike, there was a specific question for you out here around vMix
Yeah, and before I answer that, you know, with me, since we have a lot of guests and are coming from all over the world in different setups, and they're not, like I mentioned before, not that, not all of them are that technically savvy. They, you know, may not have the gear like this. I do my best to get their audio as good as we can to begin with. You know, the better you can record, the better, you know, your output's going to be, like you said, garbage in, garbage out. But ultimately, if they're, there's only so much I can do with your sound before distorted. I don't pay for anything extra. You know, I already have an Adobe Edition, and that's, I use some of the things inside there, but I don't buy anything extra from that. Yeah. As far as the question, this question, I have VMix and recorded to YouTube Live. If I record in VMix 2, do you think that will affect my stream quality? So the only way it will is, you know, when you're doing something like VMix or Wirecast or one of those things, they're CPU intensive. And if you're streaming, you got to stream within your bandwidth, your upload bandwidth, not your download, your upload. If doing that and then also recording locally, I stream 720p, but record 1080p, and I can keep my CPU, you know, generally around the 50% range. As long as you can keep your CPU down, then it'll be okay. Once you get up 70, 80%, definitely 80, but anything over 70% on your CPU is going to start affecting, you know, could affect sync, audio video sync, and it could affect other things. So in that regard, if streaming and recording, because now it's having to encode two things, if that is affecting your CPU and getting up around 70%, it could affect that. So try and keep that down.
Yeah. Very specialized when we think of VMix and using that for your video. I will say this, if you're interested on the video side of what Mike's doing from a VMix, he's got a pretty simple, for the most part, setup using video. And so head over to jpeg2raw.com, and the number 2 gets you there, right? jpeg2raw.com gets you there. Watch a few of his videos and see what he's doing. I think he can get some good, you can get some good advice and some good, some kind of thinking about, do I want my podcast to look this way? Mike, I don't. You're always plugging me to get into VMix, and I will eventually. Trust me.
I like the technical standpoint, and I do have 3 computers here set up, but it's just adding options. It doesn't require you to have all those computers like that. If you want to email me separately, podcast@jpeg2raw.com, you know, we can talk about it. I've used XSplit, Wirecast, and VMix, and much prefer VMix over all 3 of them.
And he's the nicest guy on the planet. So you want to know Mike Coward. Bangs Naughty Bit said, podcasters completely ignore the IRS, right? Well, you know, let's talk about this really quick. One, neither one of us are lawyers. 2, we can't give out tax advice. But as podcasters, there are several things you might want to be aware of when we think about our affiliate relationships, right? Whether they send you 1099s at the end of the year or a W-4, depends on what, or W-2s at the end of the year, depending upon your relationship with them. If you are here in the United States, if you're gaining income off of them, that's all taxable, friends. And so that's one of those things that Amazon, this is the easiest thing. And boy, Mike, Amazon is always late on sending those forms out too. Mm-hmm, when you make anything you make off an Amazon affiliate link here in the United States is taxable income, and you should report that to the IRS. So, as a podcaster, you have to think, be careful what you wish for when we think about affiliate relationships. If you are doing a marketing campaign with a vendor and they are paying you for that, that is taxable income here in the United States. And so all that stuff should be tracked and should be accounted for. You're a small business as a podcaster, and if you're taking those kinds of things.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm not a tax expert. I am an accountant. But not all accountants are tax experts.
Did Holiday Inn Express last night. So.
Yeah, accountants are not just tax. There's also corporate accounting. But I will tell you this, there's also rules about hobby versus business. So if you know, there's certain rules. If your hobby or if your business, whatever you want to call it, is not making a profit, not showing a taxable profit, you could fall into the hobby rules. So you can't, any income you have, you can't ignore. You're supposed to be claiming all that stuff. You can't ignore the IRS.
I would say
income is income.
Get a tax professional at this point who does know the tax laws. If you're here in the United States, I don't know how it's handled in other parts of the country, but you want to take this into consideration, because again, it may not be a tax liability to you, but it might be. And you would hate to have a really successful podcast and someday the IRS come knocking at your door saying, hey, you know that $4,000 that you made up from your Amazon affiliate link? Yeah, we're going to have to tax you on that.
And obviously, you're talking about IRS. We're talking about U.S. only. So, because IRS is not anywhere else. But I will also say things like Amazon affiliates. Some of those affiliates are doing 1099s to the IRS. So you may think, well, if I don't tell them, they won't know about it. Well, they're getting a copy of that 1099 from the affiliate.
They are getting a copy. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. I will let Dave insert the music here. So, Dave, this is the part of where you just throw that in for me because I don't want to mess with it. We are live out here at Ask the Podcast Coach every Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. Central, 10:30 a.m. Eastern. We get a good crowd. We had a really good crowd out here this morning. I want to thank you for coming out and be a part of it. We're going to do a little bit of post show. So Mike and I will stay on for the next 20 minutes or so, an opportunity if you want to ask a few more questions. We kind of hang around. Dave Jackson will be back next week to kind of fill in the seat. Dave, thanks for trusting me to run this show without you. It's always kind of fun. Mike, thank you for taking some time out of your morning. I'm sure you've been multitasking and you got some things running in the background there, right?
Sure. Thank you for inviting me, Tim.
No, it's always a pleasure. Always good to have you, and always good to have you fill in. If you have your podcasting question, and typically we thank our awesome supporters. If you go out to askthepodcastcoach.com/awesome and you want to support Dave, that goes to Dave. By the way, this is Dave's podcast. He just lets me live here. So if you want to become an awesome supporter, askthepodcastcoach.com/awesome. And for a buck or $5 a month, you can support. You get things like the post show, and you get Dave puts out special little content from time to time. And it's just great to support Dave. So we thank those awesome supporters. And we'll be back, Dave Jackson in hand. We'll be back next Saturday. Like I said, 9:30 a.m. Central, 10:30 a.m. Eastern. That's 7:30 on the West Coast. And we apologize for you West Coasters that you have to get up early to listen to us. And with that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.